Hello and welcome to the Open Talent Report. This is the podcast where we discuss the emerging trends in labour law, employment law, independent work and the gig economy, which many organisations are wrestling with due to the growth of the open talent and gig economy. I'm your host, Conor Heaney. When I'm not presenting the podcast, I'm the MD at CXC Global, EMEA, which compliantly connects talent and opportunity. I'm delighted to be joined by this week's guest, Jan-Willem Weijers, who's the Global Contractor Workforce Manager at Adevinta. Jan-Willem, you're going to have to correct me on that in a second once you join. So, Jan-Willem, a warm welcome to the show. For those that don't know you, you're probably my go-to guy on all matters contingent workforce. You've been a good friend and supporter over the years, and it's always a pleasure to speak with you and learn from you. So, Jan, how are you doing, my friend?
Thank you, Connor, for having me in this show. I'm very honored to be part of it. And, well, I'm doing quite well at the moment. So remotely working for over 50 months already. So I don't know what offices are. So I assume that we will talk about that later.
Yes, we're going to have to deprogram you for going back into the office, Jan-Willem. You and billions of others, and including myself. So, Jan-Willem, what is your background? How did you become interested in contingent workforce management and freelancer? How did you arrive into this role?
Well, I started over 20 years ago in talent acquisition because I studied being a technician. But basically, I turned into recruitment because I really like working with people, attract people to specifically technical branches. So with my experience of talent acquisition over the years, I slide into this continued workforce area. As you have seen that HR and talent acquisition, most of the time only focusing on the employees. But moving forward with your company, it's also important to attract people outside with other kind of agreements, which it looks like it's still a silo. So working for Friesland Campina, the dairy company in the Netherlands, I was working on and responsible for the MSP program, which was my first time working on the continued workforce part as integrated solution in talent acquisition. And then I moved into Akzo Nobel, which was more a global role, leading the MSP program all over the globe. And so recently I joined eBay Classified Group, which is recently merged by Adevinta. And in that role, I'm responsible for the transition out of eBay into Adevinta and also responsible for the full continued workforce program over there.
Wow. And yeah, Willem, that your most recent role, it sounds absolutely fascinating, this transition piece. And Jan, if you look back over your career over the last 10 years, I know you had a global role with Akzo Nobel, but you were based out of the Netherlands, if I remember correctly. Have you been surprised at the pace of labour law change in the Netherlands particularly? Do you think it's a good thing that the DBA, for example, and also the WAB legislation that came out in 2020?
Yeah. Well, specifically in the Netherlands, I think it has both sides. On one side, low-skilled people needs to be protected by law. That's how it needs to be regulated on one side. On the flip side, you also need to be to have a flexibility of work somewhere, which it looks like it makes it more strict to regulate all those freelancers in the Netherlands afterwards. That over the years, some employees changed into freelancer markets because of the benefits of taxes, but also pushed by companies. So there needs to be a kind of regulation in part. So it has both sides. So from one side, that needs to be regulated more accurate. On the other side, we need to be more flexible, and also companies should be able to be more flexible to attract people in different ways with only employment agreements, we also need to be able to attract people for a shorter period of time with different agreements.
Yes, yes. And I think, yeah, Willem, it's a difficult one, isn't it, for large organizations, because we're about to see, and we'll come on to this in a minute, we see this labor market paradox, we see this war for talent beginning, this talent scarcity, but organizations need talent today, and they don't have time to wait to go and hire permanent people. But I feel a bit sorry for the large enterprise and the medium-sized enterprise at the moment, because in every single country now, the regulations around freelancers are almost converging, Jan Willem, and it's making it more difficult for, I suppose, the large enterprise and the medium enterprise organizations to actually manage those freelancers. Because, for example, in UK, you have this IR35 regulation, which has proved really difficult and problematic for big organizations and smaller organizations to manage. You've got the EB5 test in the United States and the 20-point test that goes along with that for independent contractors. And then I believe, Jan, that the DBA legislation in Netherlands is being ripped up yet again. And the Dutch government are going to put in almost like the Dutch IR35 test or the Dutch equivalent. So it must be a nightmare. And we see it in my other business or my day job, which is CXC. You know, we see large organizations reaching out and going, Jesus, how the hell can we do this? How do we navigate this? But is that something that you've seen, Jan, in your experience over the last like 10 years or so, where you're just going, oh God, we need the freelancers, but we're just so worried about all this regulation?
So the most honest answer is yes. So we're still struggling. But what I have seen over the years, the last couple of years, is that so there was no legislation at all. So it was a kind of free playground. And so basically having some legislation in place will be good. I think it's good for employees or for freelancers, for independent contractors. It's also good for companies that they know how to handle them and to be compliant to legislation. But it's still not clear. That's the issue. So we're struggling for this for 4 years already, and it's still not in place. So we need to be compliant, but we don't know to what. Clearly.
Yes.
We're introducing that questionnaire or something like that. So it looks like it's an equivalent of the IR35 questionnaire you have in the UK, but it's still unclear to businesses. So I can imagine if you have the low-skilled people and you have a kind of questionnaire which classified people in the right way, that's fine. But the high-skilled people, they know why they are a freelancer. They know why are they an independent contractor. It's not by incident, it's by choice. And that's the difference we are struggling with, because the bandwidth of this population is so huge. You can't have one way of working and one-size-fits-everything legislation. That's the issue, I assume.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jan Willem, because, you know, we are very active in the open talent economy, right? We, you know, the podcast is called Open Talent Report, rather imaginatively, right? But this is the thing that we're really passionate about, Jan Willem, because you've got the low choice, no choice workers, right? The workers that are engaged through platforms or other labour intermediaries, they're often on the minimum wage, or if they're on a contract for services, which is disguised as a contract for services, they're probably below the minimum wage. They've got no bargaining power. They've got no or limited rights. And in my view, Jan Willem, they're probably the people that need the most protection, right? They are the people that we need to legislate for and look after and care for, because you're right. The people with the bargaining power, the highly skilled, the people that choose this way of life, this way of working, they can go and work anywhere and they can name their price, right? They've got that high negotiating power. And yeah. You're quite right. I think the problem that we need to solve as industry experts, as government, as responsible intermediaries or responsible companies, is to make sure that we are making sure that those workers that are low choice and no choice are engaged properly and compliantly and have some rights at least. Would you agree, Jan?
I totally agree on that. So for that population, we need to have proper legislation. They need to be protected by law. That's correct.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what's happened, Jan, Willem, and I don't know if you'd agree with this or not, is that the gig and the platform economy has grown so fast. Yeah. You know, if you look at the last 11 years, the gig economy has really taken off after the last great recession, Jan Willem.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the legislation has not caught up. And what you have is all this different case law around Europe. So you might have Deliveroo being sued in Netherlands by drivers or couriers, it's same in Belgium, same in UK. And UK legislation might say that they're self-employed. The Belgian courts might say that they should actually be employed. The Dutch courts might say they've been employed.
Yeah.
And we've got all this confusion in this space because governments thus far have refused to introduce legislation to protect these workers. And I know there's some work going on at a European level at the moment to standardize this, Jan Willem, but I think it needs to be done much sooner before these workers are I suppose exploited further.
Yeah, agree to that.
Yes, and yeah, Phil, moving on to, I suppose, more positive questions, if I may. So the UK Financial Times has described what they're calling the labour market paradox, Jan Willem. And in short, what they mean by that is in the year 2020, we had something like 400 million people or approximately so unemployed. Yet in that time period between 2020 and 2021, a lot of those people have still not been re-employed. And then on the other hand, Jan Willem, you have pretty much every medium and large enterprise regionally and globally hiring like crazy, and they cannot get the people they need. So in your view, Jan Willem, is there a way that the labour market paradox can be solved?
That's correct. So what you see in the market, and especially to my colleagues from talent acquisition or talent management specifically, is that let's say it more straight. So it's more black and white right now. Just saying, as you know me, we still focusing very old fashioned to what you have done in the past, what you have learned, what your competence. It's not about your competences. It's about what you have done. And yes, if we should change that to a focusing or what you might can do in the future or what you're able or capable to do in the future with some adjustment somewhere or some education training, and also thinking about competence in a broader way, then we should solve this problem. But it is that's very local, you know. So
yes,
people work on the local level. Companies should integrate talent management, not only focusing on their internal employee base, but it should be extended to also the freelancer market, or say the continued workforce market in a broader way. Because what I'm all the time saying is that your employee of today will be your freelancer or independent contractor for tomorrow. And so if we start focusing on competence in the future, or competence as is, and just change from job descriptions and role descriptions to what you should deliver to the company with you are capable to. So, and if you don't have it, but there is a chance to learn it, just focus on that. So, and in my opinion, we more and more should focus on that piece. And that's also something you see in the gig economy. Yeah. So the people just coming from school right now, they want to have another choice of life. They want to focus on something else instead of only working for 40 years in one company. They want to share their capacity and capability over the years, maybe for a freelancer. And when they change to in another period of time in their lives, they want to more stability and to say, okay, now I want to become an employee But afterwards, when I have some more time, I want to be a freelancer again. But all this legislation around in mortgage paying, so you need to have an employment, otherwise it's quite hard to get mortgage. Then yes. When you have some insurance for your retirement, so basically banks are very nervous about this kind of changes all over the time. So yeah, and if we are not changing the minds of people to start in our own companies, so act very local and start doing it from tomorrow slightly different as we did before, instead of saying to the government, you have to change all the legislation. No, you can start from tomorrow to think about what we should have in the future, instead of what kind of people we're looking at right now with the competence they have right now in to change into what we might have or what we can transform into what we should have in the future.
Yeah, Jan Willem, I agree. And I have to say, we've had some amazing guests on the show, Jan Willem, but I really like the way that you've addressed that particular problem. And if I could pick up on two things that you've said. So let's look at the large or medium-sized enterprise at the moment, right? They're, for example, they're really struggling to get that talent they need. And I think part of the problem is around the elements that you've mentioned, Jan, but also they don't have a total view of their talent, right? And they don't have a total view of the talent that are alumni of their organization. They don't have a total view of talent that were retirees of their organization. They don't have a total talent view of the freelancers that were in their organization, the people that they've made redundant from their organization, and those people that have previously applied to their organization or have left their organization. There's no single view typically in most organizations on that. And if organizations could structure and integrate all that, those different data points, and have a way of contacting them or keeping them warm or curating them, whatever the phrase du jour is, surely that would be a great way to do it, Jan. And I suppose my question is, do you agree with that? And have you ever seen something like that implemented?
So the first part of your question, I'm totally agree on that. Second part is that large organizations still struggling. So what you see, so I think there were some small examples in integrating a talent acquisition, HR, recruitment, a little bit continued workforce into the same processes. But most of the companies working in silos. So HR talent acquisition is working and focusing on employees. Then you have, if you are lucky, HR is also responsible for effort-based continued workforce. And then you moved over to procurement for outsourced service and ad. So they're basically the same people, you know? But
yes.
But into the organization themselves, you have to go to other functions to have the same people. And as you said, there is no... So let's focus on the systems. Yeah? So I haven't found in this market, in this industry, a integrated system, which is a talent acquisition system together with a VMS. It's not integrated. So
you're kidding.
Yeah. So we have an HR system. We have a recruitment system. If you're lucky, they are integrated already, more or less. And then you have a VMS. So it is part of the total soup, but it's not talking together. So if I'm asking, do you have talent pools? And then we said, yes. So in continued workforce, we have a talent pool. And yes, in our own talent program, we have talent pools. And recruitment or talent acquisition, say, of course, we have our talent pools. Yeah. And the second question will be, have you been shared those different talent pools or have you integrated them?
Yeah.
No. And then it is quite quiet.
Yes.
So I think that's the answer to your question.
It is. But Jan, isn't it truly amazing that is a relatively simple solution that could solve quite a large part of the problem?
But yeah, I think so. So if the suppliers of that particular systems will think about a really integrated system, then you have the market by tomorrow.
I agree. Maybe that's our new business idea, Jan Willem, but unfortunately all our listeners will probably gobble it up, but that's okay. But I agree with you, Jan. And the second thing, Jan Willem, I wanted to address, it's not really related to talent acquisition or finding people or anything like that, but I really want to address the point you made around banks and mortgages and financial services. I think it's such a shame, Jan Willem, and maybe there's another business idea or opportunity out of this particular point, but it's such a shame that freelancers are essentially shut out of the global and local finance marketplace. And you're right. If you're a freelancer going to get a mortgage or a bank loan or a car loan or some form of credit, it's almost impossible unless you sign your name away in blood, right? And I think as the trend for freelancers continues to grow, which according to SIA and other large bodies, that is set to do so, essentially you're looking at potentially 50% of the workforce, which is freelancer or independent or non-permanent, locked out of the mortgage and financial marketplace, which I think is absolutely astonishing.
Yeah, I totally agree on that. As I said before, so even banks and mortgage suppliers or whatever, they should think about the business model, because if the market is changing, they have to change at all. So yes. Otherwise, people stuck and living together with their parents for ages. So
exactly.
Who
wants to do that? Have you met my parents?
So we need to think about it. So I really want to address to the financial services that they have to think about. So it's slightly changing a little bit. So a couple of years ago, starting as a freelancer, the first 3 to 5 years, you're not able to buy a house. But now there are some more services you're able to get some mortgage, but it's quite hard. You have to have all paperwork done, and it will take ages because they want to make sure that you're earning money over the years. But honestly, working as an employee, by today, you can have a permanent contract. By tomorrow, they will ask the works council to restructure the organization. 6 months later, you're out of the business. And then what happened then?
Well, that's the interesting point, Jan Willem, isn't it? That you know, what the pandemic has shown, and what the Great Recession has shown of 2008 to 2010, and the crashes of the 80s and before, is that the days of a job for life, they ended. Yep. Around 1981, right, when the right-wing governments came to power in the UK and various other countries, where they wanted a flexible labour market above all, and they wanted to reduce reliance upon trade unions and the work council. So you're quite right. In some countries, yes, you have to go through the works council, but once you get their approval, you can do whatever the hell you want, really, as long as it meets the local employment and labour law. And you're right, Jan, and I don't think the banks have adjusted their model for that no longer job for life, but also that they cannot work properly with freelancers. And, you know, if anyone listening has enough capital to set up a bank, then, you know, I'd love to get involved with the bank for freelancers, because there's definitely a market opportunity there for sure. Yes. So what's this space, Jan Willem? So, Jan, moving on to the future, if we can, this is quite an esoteric question, but just bear with us. If you had a magic wand, what single employment or labour law change would you like to make or see?
Well, that's a very interesting question. Let me shortly think about it. So I think that all parties involved should be on one table talking to each other and just understanding each other from different angles, and just start talking about what the different angles of view will be to be fit for the future. So as have said, it's very narrow-minded right now. So if it's not my function, it's not my problem. So if we can make it integrated, that it will be a problem of the future to make sure that we are fit for the future, then we should start talking to each other to better understand what the different pros and cons are. And then, yeah, so that's basically something we typically do in the Netherlands. So you end up somewhere in the middle, hopefully yes, with a solution which can fit everybody.
I like it. And yeah, Willem, if we go back to something we discussed a few moments ago around essentially reskilling workers. So I'd be quite interested to explore how the government use platforms to reskill either low-skilled workers or those workers that have been displaced. Can you tell me and our audience a bit about how it works over there? Because it sounded bloody brilliant.
Yes. So some commercial suppliers stepped into that because so government's a little bit disappearing about that. So as enterprises, they have to organize it themselves, and even some platforms step into that because they are able to reskill people and to connect to enterprises, which I think in so essentially it's good. So but it needs to be not only on a commercial part, it also should be just a trigger to companies that if you really believe that you should be fit for the future, that you should step into that.
And Jan Willem, if we can look at direct sourcing, because it's something I wanted to speak with you about, because I've had the pleasure of knowing you for a reasonably long period of time, and I'm always struck by your ability to innovate and introduce new ideas to some of the programs that you've ran before. If we can look at direct sourcing, I believe you might have been responsible for implementing it previously, Jan Willem, in one of your organizations. So can you tell us a bit about what do you think the benefits of direct sourcing are, and how did you go about getting your organization to buy into what you were selling when it comes to direct sourcing?
So basically direct sourcing I've implemented twice, but both in FrieslandCampina and AkzoNobel starting with. So direct sourcing, you have two different things here. So most of the time it starts with cost control. But it's broader than that. So only focusing on cost control, taking out the middleman, I'm not sure that's the real trigger to implement direct sourcing. It's absolutely beneficial, but we still need suppliers to attract people and to connect them to enterprises as well. But having direct sourcing in place, you have better grip, better visibility. You are able to act in the moment to attract, to find people and to connect to people as you have built up your direct sourcing channel. So it's not only about cost control. It's also working as a company. If you have developed in HR a employer value proposition, I really would connect that to contractor value proposition as well. So you have to sell your company to those future workers, which I said already, your employee of today, it will be your freelancer of tomorrow. So having those guys in your own sourcing channel, which should be connected to the talent source in talent acquisition, that's really beneficial because your silver medalist, your alumni, everybody who has worked for you and still being an ambassador of your company, you easily can attract and to make them aware that you have some new opportunities. So I think that should be the main reason to implement direct sourcing, that you can act As I have said, you need to have the right people on the right time with the right price and the right agreement, which is also a beneficial to the company. So if you can implement direct sourcing from that point of view, then you really fit for the future to attract people and to sell your company to the market in a quite broader way than only being a good employer of choice. So you also need to be a company of choice, both for independent contractors and freelancers and employees at the same time.
Mm. I get you. And yeah, Phil, I'm often struck. I'm a big believer and I'm very passionate about the benefits of direct sourcing, and probably the current talent scarcity and war for talent is a great time to do it and to build up those talent pools of known and post talent. But don't you often think that talent acquisition, whether it's for permanent or contingent or freelancer hiring, would be better and more efficient if organizations could adequately demand plan better? So what I'm saying is, oftentimes I'm struck by how even the biggest, most efficient organization does not have resource demand planning in place, and they don't have system-based approach to doing that. Have you seen anything in the organizations that, firstly, actually, would you agree with my view, Jan Willem? And if you don't or you do, great. But also, have you seen anything in any of the organizations that you've worked in where an organization has actually cracked this and launched a successful resource demand planning program or initiative?
Yes. So answer to your first question, I totally agree. Secondly, as I know, there is only one company in the Netherlands, which is a large enterprise, which have already implemented a kind of demand resource planning already. But I think it's not common right now. It's still siloed in companies that they're focusing on their own talent cycles and everything, but really integrated. So, especially in the large companies I've worked for, we have a very high standard of integrated supply chain. But when it becomes to people or capacity, then it's time. And sometimes I'm surprised and said, we should learn from our colleagues from integrated supply chain in how if you can have a completely demand planning for your raw materials, for everything, and then it becomes to people in plants or whatever, and then you're not able to do a proper demand planning. I'm not saying there's no demand planning at all, but it could be better integrated.
Yes,
I totally agree on that.
And I mean, it strikes me, even in the most efficient organizations that have the best supply chains in the world, you know, you think of some of the big organizations. You know, they're shipping containers from Denmark to Netherlands to Africa to Pacific. But if you ask those organizations, could they tell you how many people they will need in a certain role, in a certain country, in 6 months, 9 months, 1 year, 2 years, they would look at you like you're probably a crazy person. And
that's true, basically. But
and they're right in my case, of course. I fully accept that, Jan Willem. But in a more serious note, isn't it fascinating that they can manage the supply of widgets, pencils, parts, whatever, but they can't manage the efficient supply of people? And my thoughts are, Jan Willem, that if you can move capacity planning or demand planning from people from last in time, which, let's face it, most organizations get the resources that they want or need last in time, right? They don't get them just in time, and they definitely don't get them first in time. So if we could integrate that into some of the technologies that we'd mentioned earlier to give a total view or total single view of talent in an organization and all the different channels, my God, we could really make a big difference. And I think, you know, if there's organizations listening, you know, before you want to solve the problem, maybe it's better to look at, well, what is your actual capacity or demand plan for resources, and are they the right resources at the right time, and where are you going to hire them, and how are you going to go about it? So I think there's some good ideas from what we discussed there.
Yeah. So let me a little bit adjust it a little bit, because so in big organization they do have demand planning, of course, but so if you're lucky, it will be 6 months or a year. But thinking about what we have spoken before already is that fit for the future, you had to have a look on what you need in 5 years, because it takes time to get people there.
Yes.
So only having demand planning for 1 year, and of course it's quite difficult I don't have that ball that you can look into and just to say, well, in the coming 5 years I need double the people of maintenance or whatever. So of course that's quite difficult. And the good thing of raw materials, for instance, they don't speak, they don't have you can stock them somewhere, and in 5 years it still will be there. But people, they have an opinion and they make their own choices. So that's what demand planning is doing. It's not about what kind of capacity I'm looking for. No, I want that particular person on that place in the coming 2 years. And that's the issue. So if that particular person decided to leave the company, then they have an issue, because they don't know about what they are looking in terms of competences. No, I want to have this particular person on that place.
Yes, but Jan Willem, Doug Leiby has a great phrase that he's mentioned many years, and we love Doug Leiby at Beeline here, right? I think he's a bloody brilliant guy. But I think if I can paraphrase him accurately, his phrase is, it's people, not pencils, right?
That's the difference.
But it is the difference. But I come at this problem somewhat maybe counterintuitively to that. I would say, why don't we use some of the same processes as that we use for planning for pencils or building pencils or selling pencils, as we do for acquiring the people skills, whether they're freelancer, contingent, employee, non-employee, statement of work, as we do to procuring parts to make pencils? To me, there's things that we can borrow from there, but it sounds like you're in agreement, Jan Willem, with that.
Yes, anyway. Yeah, that's correct. So yeah, I think we can learn from that. And as we start this podcast with talking about changing from just a job description to competences, so that's the same with pencils. So we never will use pencils to build a building or something like that. It's just that we have some writing. So if we know that what's the why of the pencil, we also need to know what's the why of the people. So it's slightly different, of course, but focusing on capacity instead of just the job description, that will make the difference in the future, I assume.
Yeah, I agree, Jan Willem. And Jan, if we can start now to look at the future, so is there really any interesting technologies or trends that you've seen in your global role that really interest you as it pertains to talent and freelancers? Anything of interest?
Well, so very high line, what you have seen is that we have that robotics, we have AI. So we also need to think about, should we still have people in companies doing that role that can be be replaced by robotics or AI? But we still need to have some humanity in companies, you know. But focusing on that, let's focus on the complexity of the human being and use that in the company. And just the, let's say, it's not the silly things or just the operational repeating things that you can replace by robotics or AI. That's something coming up right now. But secondly, so the good thing out of this pandemic is that this hybrid model of working had direct sourcing all over the globe. So it's cross country. So even in the EMEA region. So I think Europe should think about to align their legislation in the labor market to make sure that we can work abroad, not with boundaries, yes, because of all those tax legislation and regulations and everything. That would be, I think that will be a very step forward in future thinking, is that out of this pandemic, we know that we can work remotely from everywhere. So you don't know if I'm in Rotterdam, yes, or I'm in my camper car in Spain, for instance. So it should not make, yes, sense to people where you're working. Of course, you need to connect in the offices with people, because so I think I will be a very big fan of that hybrid a part of working. So you can integrate your family part together with working and everything. It makes you more flexible to the company. But even I think you will be more motivated to work sometimes 1 or 2 or 3 hours more because you don't have travel time. So yeah, it's not commuting to the offices and then you're still there doing nothing or just have a cup of coffee with your colleagues. And at the end of the day, sometimes realizing what I have done today. And I'm not saying this is a really, really big part of being part of the company, but it could be more efficient.
Yes.
And so working remotely sometimes,
yes,
yeah, I think it will be more beneficial for them, for companies to provide those opportunities to the people working for your organization.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jan Willem. Our CXE Europe company has been remote first for the, yeah, 6 years we've been in business, and I suppose I don't know any other way to do it at this point, but my best guess is that remote working or hybrid working actually eliminates a lot of the, I suppose, bullshit office politics, yeah, that you get, because I it might not entirely eliminate it or eradicate it, but what I find is that you don't maybe have time to do that. To do that.
Exactly.
And because you're governed by video calls now more than anything, you almost have to behave in a more appropriate way than you would in a face-to-face meeting, for example. I think there's some hidden benefits to remote working, apart from the obvious ones that you mentioned, of course. But do you think, Jan Willem, that there's any challenges or difficulties around remote working?
Sure. First of all, I also think that employees or contractors or whatever have the feeling that you are part of the company, that really makes sense. Huh? So working remotely for more than 40 months, and then I've never met my colleagues before. How do I have the feeling that I'm working for the company which are paying my invoice or salary?
Yes.
So that's really important part. So companies need to take care about that. But on the other hand, just being in the office and that people have the trust that when you're working remotely, that you still have the same outcome if you've been in the office. Yeah. So I think that you have to think about that.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jan Willem. And Jan, before we close out the show, our final question is often, what, if any, Jan Willem, is your prediction for the future work?
That's basically, work will change.
Well, I think that is a very nice way, Jan Willem, to end the show. So, Jan Willem, I have to say, I always enjoy immensely our conversations. I'm sure our audience will have done so as well. Where is the best place for our audience to find you, Jan Willem? Are you on LinkedIn?
I'm definitely on LinkedIn, of course. You can all find me there. The only thing I want to add to what I said very shortly is that, of course, work will change in the future, and we need to to be ready for it. That's the second part of my sentence. So, and you can start from tomorrow to do it different as we did before.
I love it. Love it, Jan-Willem. So, Jan-Willem, on that exceptionally positive note, you've been a great guest. I'd really like to say thanks so much for appearing, Jan-Willem, and look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very honored, and I'm happy that I had the ability to share my thoughts, sometimes a little bit black and white, but you know me, it is, we end up somewhere in the middle most of the time, and I'm really happy to connect to people if they have any questions about what we have discussed about. So I'm open to have any discussion about that.